Thank you, Mr. Evans, and good afternoon, everyone. I'd like to welcome everyone on the webcast as well. People must have looked at the bulletin to see who was speaking today and decided that there was a better option somewhere. But anyway, here we are. I'd like to start today by turning to Psalm 23. This is a familiar passage to start with today. It's a short little chapter, just 6 verses. And some of us may have memorized this at some point in our life. But let's turn there today, and I just want to start by reading this. And this is a Psalm of David, one of many Psalms that he did. But in this Psalm, it talks about God being the shepherd of his people. And David wrote this psalm from the perspective of the sheep. And we know David had experience as a shepherd. He knew what it took to take care of sheep. And he had even delivered some of the sheep he was watching after from the clutches of a lion and a bear. But David also recognized that God, as the ultimate shepherd, will take care of and deliver his sheep. So I want to start by just reading these verses. I'm going to read all 6 of them, and then I'll make some comments. But just think about as we read these verses. It says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. He makes me to lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside the still waters. He restores my soul. He leads me in the paths of righteousness for his name's sake. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. For you are with me, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. You prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil, my cup runs over. Surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever." And you could do several messages based on this chapter, the verses that we read here. And we can do our own Bible study on this chapter by looking at each one of these verses and what they mean for you and I from the perspective of God looking out for us as his sheep. But I'm not going to look at every verse today, but I want to point out a couple of things before we move on. First of all, in verse 1, David points out that God is our shepherd. And if God is our shepherd, we will lack nothing. We have everything that we need. And in verse 2, as you read this one, what mental picture do you come up with? Green pastures. Maybe tall green grass moving back and forth as the gentle breeze blows through the pasture. And perhaps it's sunny and warm, a comfortable place to be. And beside the still waters, sheep need clean water to drink. And if allowed, the sheep would drink from just any standing water or from mud puddles or other sources that may contain things that would harm them. The still water that's found in those deep, pure pools is good, clean, refreshing water for the sheep. And the sheep wouldn't like to drink from the fast-running water or rushing water in the turbulent streams. It might even be frightening to them or unsettling to them. And sometimes the shepherd would have to create a still place for the sheep to drink from. And in verse 4, we are all in the shadow of death. We don't know how much time we have. And also, we're all faced with a constant barrage of sin, which has a penalty of death. We're bombarded constantly with evil. And David recognizes that with God as our shepherd, we will be protected from such evil. The rod and the staff of the shepherd represent that protection. Your shepherd would use the rod and the staff to fend off predators and would-be attackers of the sheep, as well as possibly use his shepherd's crook to rescue a sheep that was in distress. And I would encourage us all to read this psalm on a regular basis throughout the year. Maybe we do it once or twice a month. Maybe we do it weekly. But as we read this psalm, let's meditate on what these verses are saying to us and what it means for us to have God as our shepherd. And in doing so, the verses we read here should comfort us, especially if we are experiencing a time when we feel like that there's no hope, or when we feel like we're all alone. We are never alone. Our shepherd is always looking out for us. The title I have today for this split sermon is Beside the Still Waters. And in the time remaining today, I want to look at this idea of a shepherd leading his sheep beside the still waters and what we can learn from this. And I want us to picture God as our shepherd leading us beside these still waters and what we can do to maximize the results of that experience. And I also want to look at some other examples in the Bible of when the waters were not so still and how we can deal with those events. We may find ourselves in some difficult or some frightening situations, and we may even create those situations sometimes. And sometimes our situations can affect others. How we handle those situations or how we react to these situations when they come up affects our lives. And our lives can be either impacted in a positive way or in a negative way, depending on how we handle it. And before I focus on the still waters, I want to look at three different situations we read about in the Bible. And as we look at them, I want you to also think about the perspective of a shepherd and his sheep. Some of the information that I gathered seems to indicate that sheep are pretty stupid animals. They depend on the shepherd for safety and survival. And it's sort of funny in a way, and fitting too, I guess, that we are referred to as sheep in the Bible. And I'll just leave it at that. But we depend on our shepherd for our safety and survival, especially in a spiritual sense. And these situations that we're going to look at can offer us some parallels in our own lives. And with each situation, I'm going to introduce it with a question in regard to our shepherd. And each one of us will have to answer this question for ourselves. And if the shepherd is to be successful in taking care of his sheep, the sheep must follow him, and the sheep must listen to the shepherd. So the first situation we're going to look at is, we'll turn to Jonah chapter 1. This is a familiar story for all of us, but Jonah chapter 1. And the question that I have for this situation, do we try to run from the shepherd? Maybe another way to rephrase that, are we willing to follow our shepherd? But let's look here at this story of Jonah. And again, it's a story we're all familiar with. We'll start in verse 1 of Jonah chapter 1. It says, "Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, 'Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up against me.' But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. And he went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish, So he paid the fare and he went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. So Jonah was given an instruction by God to go and warn the people of Nineveh. But Jonah decided he was going to run from God. He didn't want to do that. And we should all realize, as Jonah did, you cannot hide from God. In verse 4, "But the Lord sent out a great wind on the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was about to be broken up. Then the mariners were afraid, and every man cried out to his God. They threw cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. But Jonah had gone down into the lowest parts of the ship, and he had laid down, and he was fast asleep." God sent a great wind to shake things up here. And you can imagine it probably was a pretty frightening situation to be in. And the raging sea caused great fear to come over to those on the ship. They were afraid for their lives. But Jonah was asleep. And we'll skip on down to verse 15. There's some other things happened. They cast some lots and different things. But down in verse 15, "They picked up Jonah and they threw him into the sea, and the sea ceased from its raging. And then the men feared the Lord exceedingly and offered a sacrifice to the Lord and made vows." And in verse 17, "The Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah, and Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." They didn't really want to throw Jonah overboard. And Jonah had told them, you know, "Throw me overboard and it'll be okay." But when they did, the sea was calm. And even though Jonah had decided to run from God, God had prepared a way to deliver Jonah through the great fish. And God could have said, "Okay, Jonah, that's it. I'll use someone else." But he didn't. God saved Jonah. And Jonah did eventually do what God had asked him to do. But a takeaway or a lesson from this situation for us: there are times in life when the storms rage and we may be afraid for our physical life. And those storms may be as a result of a choice that we made. And God may be trying to get our attention. And even so, God can still deliver us. God will shepherd us and will take care of us. But He cannot shepherd us if we are running away from Him, if we're not willing to follow Him. We must have a desire to be shepherded. The second situation that I want to look at, we'll turn over to Mark chapter 4. Mark chapter 4. And the question that I would ask for this situation: do we trust our shepherd? Do we trust our shepherd? Do we trust our shepherd to take care of us? Let's look at an experience here with Jesus and his disciples. Jesus had spent the day teaching the multitude through the use of numerous parables. And he had been out in the water facing the people at one point as he taught them. And after a full day of teaching, Jesus decided that it was time for him and his disciples to cross over the sea. So they got in a small boat, and possibly more than one small boat for them to travel in. But we'll pick up the story, Mark chapter 4, in verse 35. It says, "On the same day, when evening had come, he said to them, 'Let us cross over to the other side.' Now when they had left the multitude, they took him along in the boat as he was, and other little boats were also with them. And a great windstorm arose, and the waves beat into the boat so that it was already filling. But he was in the stern, asleep on a pillow. And they awoke him and said to him, "Teacher, do you not care that we are perishing?" And as they were going across the sea in these boats, this storm came up, and the boats were taking on water. And they were afraid for their life. And I imagine, again, it was a pretty frightening situation. But Jesus was asleep in the boat. So they woke him up. "Don't you care? We're all about to die. What are we going to do?" In verse 39, "Then he arose and he rebuked the wind, and he said to the sea, 'Peace, be still.' And the wind ceased, and there was a great calm." And here Jesus rebuked the wind. And the word used here for rebuked is to censure or admonish. So Jesus gave strong disapproval or admonished the wind in this situation. And when he had said, "Peace, be still," the Greek word in this translation is that he muzzled the wind, much like you would muzzle a dog or an animal. So Jesus muzzled the wind, and there was a great calm. This was a life-threatening and probably a very frightening situation. But here, Jesus muzzled the wind, and there was great calm. Everyone was safe. And then Jesus questioned them. And I tried to imagine being on the receiving end of these questions. It would not be a very comfortable place to be. But in verse 40, "But he said to them, 'Why are you fearful? How is it that you have no faith?'" Or in my margin, it seems to indicate he's asking them, "Have you still no faith?" Jesus' response here is, "Why are you so afraid? How is it that you still don't have faith?" Now, the disciples had spent time with Jesus, and they had witnessed many miracles, but they still were lacking in faith. They were in the very presence of Jesus Christ, and yet they were still afraid that they were about to die. In verse 41, "And they feared exceedingly and said to one another, 'Who can this be that even the wind and the sea obey him?'" Their reaction was one of probably terror. "Who can this be that even the wind and sea obey him?" They knew who he was. The disciples had walked with Jesus. They had witnessed his power. And still, they lacked faith. How much more difficult then is this going to be for you and I? How would we react in this same situation? How strong is our faith? Would we be terrorized? Or would we trust in this situation for God to take care of us? The third situation I want to look at is back in Matthew chapter 14. Another situation when the waters were not so calm and still. And the question that I have for this situation is, do we doubt our shepherd? As you turn to Matthew chapter 14, in the first part of this chapter, John the Baptist was beheaded. And when Jesus had heard about it, he went by boat to a deserted place to be by himself. But a great multitude followed him. And it says he was moved with compassion for them, and he healed their sick. And it's interesting, if you go over and look at Mark's account of this situation, he adds something else to this account that's interesting. And he adds that Jesus was moved with compassion for them because they were like sheep that had no shepherd. So he began to teach them many things. So again, Jesus spent the day, spent some time here healing and teaching the multitude. And as the day was wearing on and getting late, the disciples were telling him, "You know, it's getting late. Let's send these folks on their way so they can get back to their villages and buy some food before it's too late." But Jesus' response to that was, "Let's feed them." And they fed 5,000 men, it says, and that's not counting women and children, with 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. And it says they had plenty left over. And when all this had happened and when they had finished eating, Jesus made his disciples get in the boat and go before him to the other side while he sent the multitudes away. And Jesus went to be alone and to pray. And we'll start in verse 24, Matthew chapter 14. So now he's told them to get in the boat. "But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them walking on the sea." So the boat that these disciples were in was being tossed around because of these waves and the wind. And Jesus was aware of the situation, and he went to them walking on the sea. And it says during the fourth watch, which was probably sometime between 3 and 6 a.m. as we would know it. And verse 26, "And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, 'It is a ghost,' and they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, 'Be of good cheer,'" or "take courage, it is I, do not be afraid." And you can imagine their reaction, you know, when they saw this person coming to them. You know, they were thinking it was a ghost, but first thought I would have, if I had just been with Jesus and witnessed all this stuff, would this be the first thought that he's coming to get in the boat with us? But apparently that was not their first thought. And they probably couldn't tell who it was, and I'm sure this was a very scary situation. And then to see someone walking on the water. But Jesus tries to reassure them, tells them it's okay, don't worry. Verse 28, "And Peter answered him and said, 'Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water.'" And I would think that if I was in that boat and Jesus spoke and said, "It's okay, it's me," then I would think, "Well, it's glad this is over." But that Peter is like, "Well, if you're really who you say you are, command me to come out on the water." And then in verse 29, "So he said, 'Come.' And when Peter had come down and out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried out, saying, 'Lord, save me.'" So Jesus had commanded him to come out of the boat, and Peter steps out and he's walking on the water. And thinking, "This is pretty cool, I'm walking on the water." And then he realized, uh-oh, these waves are really rough. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea. And he begins to sink and he cries out for help. In verse 31, "Immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and he caught him. And he said to him, 'O you of little faith, why did you doubt?'" So Jesus immediately rescues Peter. "And when they got into the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, 'Truly, you are the Son of God.'" And when they got in the boat, the wind stopped. And those in the boat recognized that Jesus was the Son of God. Maybe they were all doubting, but Peter's doubt and the situation that he found himself in served as an example to all the others in the boat, you know, of what Jesus could do, of his power, and reinforced the fact that Jesus was the Son of God. So during this storm, Peter doubted for at least a moment that he could walk on the water with Jesus' help. During our storms, will we doubt that our shepherd is there with us? Will we doubt that our shepherd can deliver us from that storm? And the care that our shepherd provides for us should serve to strengthen our faith in him. And there are many examples that we read about in the Bible that should encourage us all. And they should help to remove any doubt that we might have. During these stormy times, pictured by these examples that we just looked at, an individual would find themselves in survival mode. You know, if you're on the boat and you're being tossed around, the waves are crashing, the wind's blowing, your focus, first of all, is just to survive. And we may be scared of the wind and the waves. And again, our focus may just be on surviving and getting through it. Maybe we're fighting for survival. But we must not forget, or we must not doubt, that God, our shepherd, is watching over us, and that he is probably right there with us in the middle of that storm, if we would just realize that. And we've looked at three examples, and I've asked three questions so far, and you'll have to answer those for yourselves. But those examples were about some very boisterous wind and waves, some pretty frightening situations. But now I want to go back to Psalm 23, where we started. And I want to focus on the last part of verse number 2, where it says, "He leads me beside the still waters." The Hebrew word here for still, it's Strong's number 4496, and I'm probably not going to pronounce it right, but Minuiha is what it looks like. But unless I overlooked something, here in Psalm chapter 23 is the only place in the Old Testament that this particular word is used. And it can be translated as repose or a state of rest. And it can also mean an abode, a comfortable, quiet resting place. And when you look at this verse with that translation or that meaning in mind, that he, being God and our shepherd, leads us to a comfortable, quiet resting place, or to a state of rest. You know, God, as our shepherd, leads us to a state of rest, to a comfortable, quiet resting place. How do we use our time when we're resting? If you ask my wife, I'm probably asleep in the recliner, but how do we use our time when things are peaceful and they're calm? I offer up to all of us today that if we are using that quiet, restful, peaceful time properly, then we will be in a much better position to handle life when the wind and the waves are boisterous and scary. What we do while we are beside the still waters affects how we handle ourselves when the waters aren't so still. When we are beside the still waters, it can offer an opportunity for a time of reflection. It's a time to reflect on what God has given us. It's a time to reflect on how we're doing both physically and spiritually. And it's a time to reflect on what we need to work on physically and, more importantly, spiritually. And when we are beside the still waters, it's a time of reflection. And if you've ever been out walking along a creek or a pond or a lake, and you come up on a calm place, you can see your reflection in that still water. You can also see the reflection of the clouds, trees, bushes, the grass, or anything else that might be close to that water. And recently I have taken an interest in learning to paint. Now, I've painted a lot of houses in my line of work, but that's not the kind of painting I'm talking about. I'm talking about a canvas that you can hang on your wall. And there are a lot of very talented artists in this congregation that do some incredible work. And I have a new respect for that. But I am nowhere near that caliber. But it's fun to try anyway. But one thing that I've experienced from this interest is that I see things differently than I used to. I look at it with a different perspective. I find myself noticing something in nature that I've seen hundreds of times. But I find myself looking at it in a different way. And I think, and I see this becoming a nice painting. You know, I appreciate it more. And at Winter Family Weekend this year, Miss Amy Duncan curated the art show. And she did a poster to place at the entrance to the show. And I want to share just a small portion of that to give us something to think about during this time of reflection. It says, "Artists know that, despite what the world may think, art is not a luxury. Art is a necessary part of life that allows people to process, to dream, to mourn, to think, to experiment, to take healthy risks, and to hope. You are creating something means that you care. Creating means paying attention. To create is to make something good or better than it was. Creating takes time and practice and courage. And it's not always easy, but it's always going to be necessary. We believe the way we spend our time matters." And the theme for Winter Family Weekend was redeeming the time. So I offer that excerpt to us as we are spending our time beside the still waters, as we reflect on our lives, as we reflect on what God has given us, that we think about some of these things. And we might also say, in that situation, how we spend that time definitely matters. It's a good time to reflect on the many blessings that God has given us. It's a time to reflect on the things that we need to work on in our lives to strengthen us both physically and spiritually. This can help to strengthen our trust in our shepherd and help to remove those opportunities where doubt may creep into our lives. A part of this reflection process, a huge part of this reflection process, is for us to ask God for help. If you turn to Psalm chapter 139, this is a psalm with a heading in my Bible of God's perfect knowledge of man. God knows and understands His creation. God knows and understands you and I. The shepherd knows and understands his sheep, and he is concerned for their well-being. We'll read here in Psalm 139, verse 23-24. It says, "Search me, O God, and know my heart. Try me and know my anxieties. And see if there is any wicked way in me, and lead me in the way everlasting." The idea here, if we look at this verse, is that asking God to search out, the word used here for search indicates to take an intimate, close-up look. So we ask God to take a close-up look at our lives. Help us to see what we need to change and fix. We ask God to deeply examine us. And this should be our prayer if we truly want to follow and live God's way. But one word of warning, if we ask God to search us and to show us these things, we must be prepared for what He reveals to us. And therein we must follow our shepherd, we must trust our shepherd, and we must not doubt our shepherd. In circumstances when things are peaceful, the tendency might be for us to just enjoy the ride and let our guard down by not diligently studying and preparing for those stormy times that will inevitably come. If things are good and we're experiencing smooth sailing, we might get spiritually lazy. We must not fall into this trap. When we're enjoying the still waters, let's take the opportunity to reflect on what God has given us and to reflect on what God has promised us if we weather the storms. I want to look at one final passage in Ezekiel chapter 34. This passage, I hope, will give us all some encouragement. This passage should illustrate that we have a shepherd that is genuinely concerned about his flock. The first part of this chapter is talking about irresponsible shepherds. Shepherds that were not taking care of their flock, not looking after the sheep in their care. Those irresponsible shepherds were just looking out for themselves while neglecting the sheep that were supposed to be under their care. Ezekiel 34, verse 11. "For thus says the Lord God, indeed, I myself will search for my sheep, and I will seek them out. As a shepherd seeks out his flock on the day he is among the scattered sheep, so will I seek out my sheep, and I will deliver them from all the places where they were scattered on a cloudy and dark day." God, as our true shepherd, will search, will look for his sheep. He will deliver those sheep and take care of them. These verses should give us some encouragement. We do have a true shepherd looking out for us. We have a shepherd that truly cares about his sheep. And when we find ourselves beside the still waters, when we are in a state of comfortable rest, let's take a moment to look around and to reflect on the many blessings that our shepherd gives us. We should truly be thankful that we have a shepherd that was genuinely concerned about his sheep. Our shepherd will deliver us and will protect us. Let's focus on these things so we make sure that we're not running from our shepherd. We will know that we can trust our shepherd. There will never be an occasion for us to doubt our shepherd. The one true shepherd will search out his sheep, and he will deliver them, and they will dwell with him forever.